This is an audio summary for your AIL 80-101 course. This episode covers the Week 5 lecture, Responsible and Explainable AI, delivered by Dr. Ghazanfar Latif on May 28. After 4 weeks building up the technical foundations of AI and machine learning, Week 5 takes a step back and asks the more uncomfortable question, even when your model is technically working, is it working right? The lecture breaks into two main acts. First, the concept of explainable AI, known as XAI, and algorithmic bias. Second, a pair of case studies showing how Amazon and Anthropic are putting responsible AI into practice. Let's start with the distinction that frames the whole lecture, standard AI versus explainable AI. Standard AI, as Latif describes it, is essentially a black box. Data goes in, a prediction or recommendation comes out, and if you ask, why did you do that? The system has nothing to say for itself. You don't know why it chose class A over class B. You don't know when it's likely to fail, and when it does fail, you have no obvious handle to fix it. If you think back to the expert systems discussion from week 3, case-based reasoning gave you at least a story. Here's the matching case, here's the adapted solution. Modern machine learning has largely traded that transparency for raw performance. Explainable AI adds two things to that pipeline. First, alongside the prediction, it produces an explanation. Here is the logic or the criteria that drove this result. Second, it opens the door for feedback, so an expert who disagrees with the output can push back and actually improve the system. The payoff is trust. And Latif is direct about why trust matters practically. Organizations are trying to adopt AI, but senior leadership is often still skeptical. If you can show people why the model said what it said, adoption accelerates. The canonical example Latif uses is the decision tree, which also happens to be one of the most interpretable machine learning algorithms in existence. The setup is a loan approval problem. Given two features, bank balance and residential status, should we approve or reject a request? The decision tree algorithm uses a concept called information gain to figure out which feature should branch first. Without going deep into the math, information gain is essentially asking, if I split the data on this feature, how much does it reduce uncertainty? In the loan example, residential status turns out to carry more information gain than bank balance, so it becomes the root of the tree. Renters and other status borrowers then get a second test on their balance, above or below a threshold. What you end up with is a visible flowchart of rules. Anyone can follow the branches, verify the logic, and understand exactly why a specific loan got approved or rejected. That auditability is what makes decision trees a natural XAI tool, and it's also why Latif came back to them here after introducing random forests in week 3. Now for a more unsettling example. Imagine a classifier trained to distinguish fish from dogs, using training images where all the fish happen to be photographed in the ocean, with coral reef and green underwater backgrounds. Ask the trained model how it knows an image contains a fish, and with XAI tools you can actually see which pixels influence the decision. The answer? Green regions in the background. The model never really learned fish. It learned ocean background. Feed it a sea photo with no fish, it'll say fish. Strip out the background and show it just the fish, it might get less confident. Without explainability, this bug is invisible. The accuracy numbers on your test set look fine. With it, the problem jumps out immediately. That fish versus background story is really a parable about algorithmic bias, which is where the lecture goes next. Latif is careful to note that bias doesn't require malicious intent. It often seeps in through data that reflects human patterns, and those patterns get reinforced automatically. The example he uses involves Google image searches for professional versus unprofessional hairstyles. The results carry racial and cultural associations. But why? The algorithm isn't explicitly encoding discrimination. Images are ranked largely by their text captions, which are written by humans. Early on, some users click on certain results more than others, and that click log data feeds back into the ranking algorithm, which learns to surface more of the same. No single actor is to blame. The bias emerges from the aggregate of human behavior flowing into a system that optimizes on engagement. The output discriminates, even though no one intended it. Latif also points out that legal infrastructure around algorithmic discrimination is still catching up. Strong laws protect against human discrimination based on age, gender, and disability, but AI-produced discrimination is much less clearly governed. That gap is real. So what do you do about it? The lecture frames the answer as fairness and explainability by design, meaning you bake these questions into every stage of the machine learning lifecycle, not just as an afterthought before deployment. At the problem formation stage, the question is as basic as, should an algorithmic solution even exist for this problem? Is it ethical? The LLM that writes your assignments for you is technically feasible. That doesn't make it appropriate. At the dataset construction stage, you ask whether your training data represents different groups equitably. At the algorithm selection and training stages, you ask whether fairness constraints need to be part of the objective function. At deployment, you ask whether you're running the model on a population it was never tested on. And at monitoring, you ask whether feedback loops in production could quietly push the model toward increasingly unfair outcomes over time. A related point, academic benchmarks are not deployment readiness tests. Research papers train and validate on carefully curated data. Real-world data is messier, more diverse, and noisier. You need to test on diversified held-out data before trusting a model in production. On best practices for fairness, Latif organizes the advice along two dimensions, policy and technology. On the policy side, it's about getting the right stakeholders in the room, including funders, developers, and end users, and building shared consensus on what the system needs to do and how to measure whether it's doing it fairly. On the technology side, it includes the usual infrastructure decisions, but also a reminder that accuracy alone is not the finish line. Fairness, bias detection, transparency, privacy, and robustness all belong in your evaluation criteria. Now to the case studies. The first is Amazon, SageMaker's responsible AI tooling. SageMaker is positioned as an end-to-end ML service that embeds bias detection and explainability at each stage of the workflow automatically. During pre-processing, it flags class imbalance, so if your training data has 10,000 examples for one class and 50 for another, SageMaker raises the flag rather than silently producing a biased model. During training, it explains overall model behavior and individual predictions, surfacing feature correlations. After deployment, SageMaker Model Monitor watches for bias drift over time, the phenomenon where a model that launched cleanly starts degrading as the world changes. There's also SageMaker Debugger, which captures statistics and logs without requiring code changes. The vendor-reported numbers Latif cited, around 33% reduction in model complexity and 42% reduction in model size with associated cost savings, are figures from Amazon's own marketing. So take those with a grain of salt. The architecture of the service itself is the more durable takeaway. Automated, stage-by-stage bias monitoring built into the production pipeline rather than bolted on. The second case study is Anthropic's Claude platform, which the professor refers to as Cloud AI throughout. The usage statistics Latif cited, including active user counts and enterprise market share figures, are unverified vendor-reported numbers, so again, treat them as directional rather than precise. What's more substantive is how Anthropic frames its responsible AI approach. The pillars include explicit ethics documentation and red lines for acceptable applications, automated bias detection baked into the models, external stakeholder review processes, accountability protocols with ongoing audits combining automated and manual review, and structured incident response procedures. The broader point is that Anthropic has built its brand around trustworthy AI and government-suitable deployment, and that architectural commitment to safety is part of what drives adoption at the enterprise level. The lecture closed with a 15-minute breakout session where students compared experiences across industries. A finance professional connected the decision tree example directly to credit decisions they'd modeled in a previous assignment. A group discussed the ethical friction of AI meeting transcription tools, specifically the trust implications when everything said on a call, including casual banter, becomes permanent record. A student from construction tech shared a framework called SCALE, which stands for sustainability, compliance, adaptability, life cycle governance, and ethical readiness. And a healthcare participant described an existing real-world XI-adjacent use case, a pharmaceutical manufacturer using an opaque model to flag patients at risk of discontinuing therapy, with the healthcare provider doing the follow-up without full visibility into how those patients were selected. A good example, intentional or not, of why transparency in AI decisions matters. The throughline of the whole lecture is that it works is not the same as it works responsibly. Explanation breeds transparency, transparency breeds trust, and trust is what gets AI actually adopted at scale. That chain from XAI all the way to organizational adoption is what week 5 is really about. That's your week 5 summary. Good luck with the rest of the course.